Right, how you doing? Welcome to the last episode of Football Memories and Moments of Series 2. It has flown by and we've had some fantastic guests with some really great stories, and we really appreciate all our guests and all our listeners. We are going to be a little bit self-indulgent this week because of a few technical issues of stopping us getting out what we want to get out. Unfortunately, we've not been able to put a couple of pods out because the technical issues we suffered through them were that bad that we wouldn't want to put them out in anybody's name. And unfortunately, availability issues have hit us as we come towards the end of the season. So, this week we are going to be talking to Football Memories and Moments, i.e. myself, Barry, and producer Andrew. And we're going to talk about things. Andrew's going to do the memory, and I'm going to do the moment. And Andrew's memories, what he says is the changing of the guard in East Lancashire between Burnley and Blackburn, which I'm sure will have lots of Burnley fans delighted and quite a few Blackburn fans annoyed. So please don't shoot the messenger, i.e. me. And then I think I'm going to talk about, I've been listening to a lot of Smersh Pod lately. It's a podcast hosted by John Rain. I can't recommend it enough. So there's actually a footballing film moment that is my favourite moment. But I hope to explain why I love it so much. It is pretty exceptional. I'll be back at the end of the podcast to just chat over our plans for the future. So on with the pod.
So it's March 2014. And it's kind of... It was the game that ended 35 years of Blackburn Rovers kind of having this, having the bragging rights over Burnley. And it was kind of, it was almost the kind of changing of the guard, if you will, because we were pushing for promotion from the Championship to the Premier League. They were not struggling, but they were mid-table. You know, they'd had all that kind of, you know, there was a lot of kind of false hope around Rovers when the Venkies took over, and, you know, the chicken farmers, and, you know, the narrative was, you know, quite funny, but you sense there was something changing that season. We'd drawn 1-1 at Turf Moor earlier in the season, just after the start of the season, probably early September, mid-September, and we'd had a few draws at that point. I think the last three games at that point, the last three league games had all been 1-1 draws. But you just sense we were unlucky to not get the 3 points at the Turf. But then we went to Ewood. Jordan Rhodes scored midway through the first half. And then really we had kind of two goals in 6 minutes. And it was just... it was just one of those kind of perfect storms, really, because the last time we'd been there, David Dunn scored 5 minutes into injury time with a goal in which he and I think two other Blackburn Rovers players had been offside. And like I say, that deep into injury time, you know, we thought we'd got that win. And I always remember that there was a fella sat next to the press box who kind of leant over and started shaking my shoulders in celebration. And to be fair to him, the next time when we won there, he came over and shook my hand, which was quite nice. Because I did used to get quite a lot of abuse outside of Ewood Park. Because my ugly mug's in the Lancashire Telegraph every week.
I mean, it is an ugly mug. Yeah. No, I'm joking. But... so just for people who don't know the geography of it and don't know the it's not a city derby like Liverpool and Everton or Manchester United and City or Arsenal Spurs, etc. But there's certainly no love lost. What is the distance between the two places?
It's about 12 miles maybe on the M65, and it is the East Lancs derby, near Classico, as we like to call it. Around these parts, is probably the most intense of all the rivalries. I mean, you can keep your Old Firm derbies and your, you know, Merseyside derbies. This is the kind of, you know, this is the ultimate derby. You know, Graeme Souness, when he was manager, said he'd never seen anything like Burnley versus Blackburn Rovers. And I think part of the problem was is we played them in 2001, 2000-2001 season, and that was the first time for 17 years maybe that we'd played them. And we were lucky to... we were a bit unfortunate at Turf Moor. I think we got beat 2-0. And then we went to Blackburn Rovers on April Fool's Day 2001 and got smashed 5-0. And it was one of those where you had to be on the coach at like 7 o'clock in the morning for an 11-mile drive, and you're in the ground for 2 or 3 hours before the game. And even now, you still got to go on a coach. You know, they don't allow fans to make their own way there. You've got to go on a coach, and there's people who live in Blackburn who are Burnley fans and vice versa, and they have to travel the 11 miles in the opposite direction to get on a coach, pick the ticket up, to drive back to their hometown, and then after the game, have to repeat that journey. So he's one of them. He's pretty fierce. And, you know, the game at Turf Moor, you may remember, there's a fantastic tackle from Kevin Ball, where he pretty much cuts David Dunn in two. And he gets sent off for it. And it's one of those that is just an incredible kind of incredible moment, really. And
David Dunn has featured twice now, one with an offside goal and one with a smash tackle. I'm beginning to think that if you were to pick a hay figure for the Rovers, David Dunn would have been the one that you would have said.
Yeah, because he was Blackburn Rovers. You know what I mean? He loved nothing more than winding Burnley fans up, and you know Burnley fans used to wind him up, and you know, there's a fantastic advert for Venky's Chicken, where he was eating in the dressing room Venky fried chicken. And you know, there's no doubt about it, he was a fantastic footballer. And had he not had his injury problems, then I'm pretty certain he'd have played a hell of a lot more games for he'd have played for England, and been picked for England on a more regular basis. But there was just something about him. He was kind of born in Great Harwood, so he's born there. I think he was an Accrington Stanley fan when he was growing up. But obviously he played for Rovers for so long in two stints and made, you know, plenty of appearances. And he was just, yeah, he was almost a pantomime figure, really. But yeah, in 2001, Kevin Ball pretty much cut him in half and we lost 2-0.
I mean, there are some fans who would quite heavily have that as their favourite moment, where you know someone from the other team. I certainly remember Ronaldo, and it's something I'll touch on in my moment later. But something I remember where Ronaldo got tackled up when he was already on the floor by Phil Neville of all people, and that kind of brought the ground to life really on an early Saturday kickoff, and Everton end up getting a draw, but we'll talk about that in more detail later when it's my go. But what I mean, you're a Burnley lad. Are you a Burnley fan simply because you're a Burnley lad?
Yeah, I don't think I don't think anybody in Burnley nowadays really supports anybody else. When I started supporting us in 1990-91, we were in the fourth division. And, you know, times were pretty hard. We'd almost gone out of the league a few years earlier, beat Orient on the last day to stay up, founded members of the Football League in Europe 51 years ago, the last time we were in Europe. And, yeah, I think nowadays it's kind of easy to support Burnley. And back then, you may have had a second club, so Spurs were my second club, my kind of Premier League club, if you will. Growing up, just for the first few years, but it was always Burnley. You know, the first kit I had was Burnley. I'd go on as many matches as I could. And apart from a kind of stint in the early 2000s, not missed that many home games since probably 94, 95, really.
So the game itself then, so you were there. Had you started? Because for those of you that might know Andrew, he does write a column for the Lancashire Telegraph, and I don't know if this is the time or place, but he's had managers expressing dissatisfaction with the column at all hours in the morning. But we'll touch on that another time. So it's kind of you know you're not just some Burnley fan who's in a position to just say, oh, because we've got this podcast, we can make this point. You do actually have a little bit of post-match standing with the Burnley fans, and just explain how that's come about.
Yeah, so, I mean, I started my first journalism job at the Burnley Express in 2001. By that point, I'd already started doing core commentary for Burnley football clubs, online player with Phil Bird. So Phil Bird's the main commentator now, was like the core comms for a number of years on and off, and I fill in now when there's no ex player around or anything like that. So that game in 2000, I think must have been one of the first commentary games we did. Might have even been the first commentary game we did. In fact, it was the first commentary game, but I wasn't doing core comms because we had Kenneth Wolstenholm doing core comms, which is a great idea. Apart from Kenneth, must have been in his probably what 80s, and you've been to the press box at Turf Moor. It is quite away from the pitch, and Kenneth Wolstenholm couldn't see anything, so he didn't get the gig full time, and I got the gig after that. I'd been watching Burnley for ages, but then at that point I'd started working for the club, written a column for the Matchday programme.
So before we move on, sorry, you can't just casually slop in there that you just the most famous World Cup commentary ever, and basically he got shipped out for you.
Well, no, I mean they got him in for that match. I don't think he was ever going to be the core commentator. He was the core commentator for that match. And then after that, I picked it up and did it for a number of years until I moved to Spain, and then did it back when I came back and a few other bits. But that night, yeah, I remember that night. I'd love to have heard Kenneth Wolstenholme's commentary of the ball he tackled, but I don't think I've ever heard it actually. You grew up knowing that Burnley Blackburn meant quite a bit. 2000, that was the first time that we'd played them since the 80s, so 1983, 17 years. There'd been a lot of Rovers were in the ascendancy for most of that time. And Simon Garner, who is an ex-Rovers player, I think he's their top goal scorer, basically sent a plane over Turf Moor in 1991 when we just missed out in the playoffs, saying, staying down forever, ha ha ha, love Rovers. And that was, he'd apparently, pay for that plane to fly over Turf. So there'd been no love lost, even though we hadn't seen each other in league action until that time. And Stan Turnett was the manager for Burnley, Graham Souness, and they did all these kind of, joint press conferences. It was a bit like North Korea the other day, not quite holding hands, meeting in the middle of Accrington, but it was something quite similar to that. And yeah, Kevin Ball managed to ruin all that goodwill with a mistimed tackle.
I love just something you said before about Souness is saying it's the most sort of
the toughest, yeah.
And this is a man who planted a I can't remember if it was Fenerbahce or Besiktas, but he planted a Galatasaray flag in their centre circle.
Yeah,
and he's saying that. I mean, but that's not me laughing at what you're saying there. That's me sort of believing, because having worked in Burnley and worked in Blackburn, there is no love lost. But I very ironically, your good lady wife is a Blackburn fan, isn't she? And a Blackburn girl.
She is, yeah.
Which is incredible. So the game itself then, what So you're there. So you're doing from your column point of view.
So 2014, which is a game, you know, my memory, if you will, Rovers 1, Burnley 2. I'm there in the press box, and like I say, the year previous we'd drawn 1-1. We take the lead. It looked nailed on that we were going to get something, but you just knew as soon as it was getting into injury time, you knew it was going to end one apiece. And like I said, Dunny got the goal. And yeah, so you know, you're in with the Rovers fans, and rather than sit you in the middle of the press box where nobody can get at you, Rovers in their wisdom kind of basically stuck us at the row of tables nearest to the fans. And like I say, I had this kind of friendly jousting, if you will, with the guy who leant over into the press box to, you know, celebrate with me a Rovers winner. But then, like I say, fast forward 12 months and we go and win there, and I think it got to the point where I didn't think I'd ever see Burnley beat Blackburn Rovers. And then, of course, now we've had the upper hand pretty much since then. And, you know, our record since then has been pretty good. So it was kind of, you know, that was the change in the guard. We thought the draw earlier in that season was, it really kind of, since then, 2014, we won in 2015 at Rovers, we won in March 2016 at the Turf, and we won a League Cup tie there last August, early this season. So we've kind of had these wins on the spin now. So, and they're obviously, you know, two divisions below us for now.
Well, one from next season, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Seeing as they've just come up, but I mean, is it almost the case now that Burnley are the bigger club, or do Blackburn still have? And I know this is very hard for you. This is me.
We've always been the bigger club.
All right, okay, fair enough.
We've always been the bigger. No. No, I think, you know, there's no. I mean, they've got, you know, bigger ground. You know, a lot of fans boycotted since the Venkies took over. So, you know, there's a lot of empty seats at Ewood. We're selling out most weeks. You know, the boycott kind of ends temporarily when Burnley's in town or Manchester United, which I don't know whether that adds any credibility to boycott finger quote marks, but there's no doubt about it now. I mean, yeah, we are the bigger club. That's it. I think they're almost an irrelevance at the minute because of the success that we're tasting. You know, it's almost kind of, it's they're not irrelevant, they're not on our radar, as we weren't for them for many years, of course. You know, when they were winning the Premier League title, we would have been second tier, I think, at that point. Possibly third tier, winning the playoff final to move up to second tier. So we were in irrelevance to them for many years, and they're in irrelevance to us now. If you speak to any Burnley fans, you know, we're not obsessed with Blackburn Rovers, but they're still obsessed with us, which I think shows you the shift in dynamic here.
And the game itself, you... be brutally honest, as we draw this to a close, how hard did you celebrate when Danny Ings's goal went in?
Oh yeah. I mean, kind of decorum and press box etiquette kind of goes out the window on a derby game. So yeah, and you know, and the first thing I look for is the fella who'd celebrated with me the year before, and he the look on his face was priceless. And like I say, he had the good grace at full time to come over and shake my hand and, you know, say, look, you were the better side. That's been coming for the last couple of years. And, you know, it's fair enough. I get plenty of abuse now on the Lancashire Telegraph website from Rovers fans. But you just got to take it with a pinch of salt, haven't you?
It's a very difficult one because I think we were saying before we started that all right, within the microcosm of Burnley and Blackburn and the Lancashire Telegraph, you have a name, and, you know, particularly among the restaurants of Manchester in your other role. Whereas I don't really think I kind of have that thing. So it's quite hard to choose. I mean, I've been playing football, adult football, since I was 14, and there's loads of lovely little moments that, as a goalkeeper, because goalkeeping is such a a lonely, lonely job. You do want to share them with people, and then you realise that people don't care about goalkeepers, so there's no point about that. It's kind of been documented that we've not had a great deal of success in the last, as an Everton fan, I don't think I've hidden that across the two series now. We haven't had a great deal of success, and you know, it's to our Liverpool brethren, that's of much amusement when you know they've picked up a lot of cups, still not won a league, but so I don't know, it's hard to say. So I don't really kind of want to get into where or drill home Everton's lack of success. Part of the reason why I think we started this was why do we love football? What are the moments that actually make us love football? And so I'm going to say for my favourite moment, it's not a favourite memory, although some nice memories will come into this, is the penalty save made by Sylvester Stallone, also known as Hatch, in Escape to Victory, because it's very rare that films get sport right. I think American films get American sports really well. Talking about like Bull Durham and Field of Dreams, and was it Any Given Sunday?
Yeah,
you know those films do get that right, but no one's ever really made a proper football film. And it's interesting, and the reason why I'm choosing a film moment as well, and I doubt he'll hear this at the start, but I might point it in his direction. There's a really good podcast at the moment called Smash Pod, which is based on it's people come in and talk to a really good presenter in John Rain, and talk about Bond films. But lately he's been doing Bond side projects, so films that have a link to James Bond actors. Or are just really good films, and it's interesting that I've been listening to loads of them, and lately they've really inspired my thinking. Escape to Victory is, in my opinion, a really good it's a good war film in the sense that it's good actors in Michael Caine, in Sylvester Stallone, but also like Tim Pickett Smith, Max von Sydow. You know, there are good actors in a war film, but then it's got the cream of football talent in Pele, in Bobby Moore, Mike Summerby, Ozzy Ardiles, and of course, you know, John Walk. And there's loads of little bits in the film that kind of make it into your everyday, not your everyday, but you know, the things that you can say. There are things that you can say in everyday life that kind of come from that film, and that penalty, and you know, you've got the Ardiles flick that Russell Osman sends back with his head, you've got lots of other stuff like Terry scored a goal, or Pele getting smashed everywhere, Bobby Moore running down, you know, the greatest centre halves in English football, probably in world football, and you know that John Colby doesn't know. If John Colby was basically the England manager now, the forums and Twitter would go mental because he's put Bobby Moore at right mid. And Bobby Moore,
crazy, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah. They're not. I don't think they took it seriously. And some of them, I mean, but what's mad about Escape to Victory is that they had current pros, and like really, I think it was filmed around about sort of late, maybe around about 1980, and it's you know, they've got current players. They've got Pele was all right. Pele, Bobby Moore, Summerby, etc. were all coming towards the end of their career, but they had Ardiles, Russell Osman, John Walk, and this wasn't like a labour of love British project. This was John Huston, you know, part of one of the biggest sort of Hollywood dynasties, and it's got a great theme or a great soundtrack that was done by the guy who, same guy who did the Rocky soundtrack, whose name escapes me right now. It's not like I've made this moment up on the spot. And there's just so much about it, but the moment that it comes down to is the penalty save at 4-4. And I think someone, I don't know the history of it, and I really hope Smash Pod does do Escape to Victory, and I would recommend that they choose a former guest of ours, David Priest, because I think David kind of knows it inside out. But I love the fact that no one wins, and the fact that had they won, they probably would have been shot. by the Nazis.
Yeah. So, and of course, there's a goal disallowed.
There is, of course,
before the penalty. Interestingly, Bill Conti's your man that you're looking for from soundtrack point of view. But interestingly, the football scenes in there were choreographed by former Burnley player Les Shannon.
That is exceptional knowledge. That is.
Well, I'm on Wikipedia. Football memories and moments. Research. Les Shannon is actually the person who choreographed the actual game. He was a centre forward for Burnley and Liverpool.
Fantastic.
In the 40s, late 40s.
It shows though, doesn't it? Because there is a good level of football, and it must have been amazing for Les Shannon to go on and tell, right, Pele, no, Pele, come here, son. No, what you need to do is this. And obviously we've had Pele's goal, which is, you know, and that's part of what there's, and the reason why I've chosen it, and just we won't spoil it for some ways, but it is for all, and for those who haven't seen Escape to Victory, I am about to spoil it. It's for all, and Sylvester Stallone saves the penalty. But in the build-up, there's a great thing where if I'm watching a penalty being taken, and even as a goalkeeper, I'm facing a penalty, I will still occasionally say to myself, come on, Ach, come on. Which is what Summerby says. And then it's great. And he dives to his left, I think, and he catches it. And he actually catches the ball, which is probably not that realistic.
Yeah.
And then he kicks the ball up in the air. Now, the only thing I'd say on that is the whistle hadn't actually gone. So technically, there was a pitch invasion before the end of the game. But there's little things about that. You know, Terry scored a goal. I do this. Goal. If you were just as good as your mouth with your hands as you are your mouth, you wouldn't be half bad. And then there's Colby. Where do I stand for a goal kick? Go to sleep, Hatch. I mean, the other aspect is that while you've got all this, the one thing that lets it down, stroke, builds it up, is that Michael Caine himself has gone, what's that? I'm making a film with a load of ex-professionals and current professionals and a quite brilliantly in shape Sylvester Stallone. Nah, I'm going to turn up as Michael Caine. And even though he's supposed to be, you know, West Ham United in England, Colby does actually look horrendously out of shape. And anyway, so you get the thing, and this is kind of what I want to link back to what is my memory as such, but my moment is that I just think I could watch it over and over and over again. I love it. But there's so many spine-tingling moments that I think are born out of football, and I think whatever level or generation of football you watch, the at the moment, because of Twitter and because of social media and because of the ability to cut a video within 2 minutes of something happening, especially across Europe, in Germany and Italy and Spain, we see what the Europeans call TIFO.
Yeah.
And we see the atmospheres, and we're given the atmospheres. But I would love, and I remember a couple of years ago when Everton beat Chelsea in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, and then unfortunately, you know, we got beat in the semis, and Lukaku, because it was the first time that Romelu Lukaku had really turned up against Chelsea. And I remember Diego Costa got sent off, and it was great watching Costa go nuts, because Costa, by all accounts, Costa, while he's mad on the pitch, he's a socialist, he's a good man who looks after people. But when he crosses that white line, he goes absolutely berserk. And sometimes, you know, we see on Twitter, oh, we don't want to see scenes like that. No, it's exactly the scenes we want to see. Let's not, you know, forget that. But, and the whole pitch, and I remember being in the ground at the time, and I just wanted the whole stadium to start singing Victoire, 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 Victoire. And you can imagine that. And then out of nowhere, Mike Summerby comes onto the pitch and says, come on, Ach. Come on. And I'd love it. And that's kind of where I'm coming back. And then, you know, just to finish Escape to Victory, it's great when the crowd runs on. And in World War II, I've never seen such good Adidas in World War II. when all the local Hungarians that were filming it, they come on and steal everything. But what it does is that taps into that atmosphere. I don't think you need to hear a song. I don't think you need to be constantly singing all the time to enjoy what is an excellent atmosphere. And I just remember that game against Chelsea where, you know, I was stood in the Gladys Street, and I was lucky to have a seat on the end of the row, so my legs, I could stick my legs out, because I'm quite tall and my legs were in bits at the time. But we were constantly, because that Everton performance was so good and so on top of what we wanted to do, the crowd never stood down, it never sat down, it was always stuff, and it never shut up. And by that I don't mean it's like they didn't sing. There was just a constant buzz of anger, of intensity, of right, we are going to make this difference. And I just think that comes from that same thing, is that, you know, in Escape to Victory, Max von Sydow, when bear in mind that he's supposed to be a Nazi officer, I'm not saying Max von Sydow did this, I'm saying his character did this. But, you know, he has an out-of-body experience when he watches Pele score the overhead kick, and he stands up clapping his hand, you know, fantastisch. And you're watching, and I just remember watching that, and watching that game at Goodison, thinking, I never, ever want this moment to stop. And I don't care that we didn't go on to win the cup. I don't care that we didn't go on to, you know, that unfortunately the Roberto Martinez reign ended, you know, in with a whimper, not a bang, because of one or two reasons. You know, mainly I don't think the manager did himself too many favours at the end, but he's gone on to do better things for him, and by all accounts he really is the lovely man that he comes across. But I just never wanted that feeling to go away. I never wanted that sensation of actually being, for once, in that hive mind of 35,000 other people all thinking the same thing, all wanting the same thing, all moving the same way, all experiencing the same highs, all experiencing the same lows, of all being delighted that something has happened, being gutted that something else has happened. And that's where you're looking at it and going, that's the moment you want. You never know. You know, when you think about football, when you think about the love of football, it's those moments. It's knowing that there's a little lovely line. There's knowing that that you're gonna take that sensation home, and you know you are gonna look at the you know, for those of you who've been to Goodison, yes, it is a wooden old stadium. Yes, it is an old, outdated stadium, but it holds such beauty. It also holds such anger, because, you know, Everton and some would argue Goodison's only better when it is when it's angry, and certainly the case. I remember a tackle on, as I was saying before, on Ronaldo when he was on the floor, and also to talk about Blackburn, the Ian Turner got sent off, who was our third choice keeper, and John Ruddy had to come on against Blackburn, and 10 men won, beat Blackburn that day 1-0, and you know, it was the fans and the players, I'll tell you, it was because Goodison was so angry that you know, I think Blackburn were just too scared to score. And that's, and I'm not saying like you need to have that much anger, you need to have etc. What I'm saying is, I think football gives you moments of clarity about why you love it, whether it be a excerpt from Escape to Victory where, you know, a penalty has been set up for an actor to save, or to a moment when, you know, you just know that your team is never going to be beaten. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I think I mean, that is it. I mean, you know, you talked about Goodison being an old ground that, you know, I love nothing more than going the cricket field end at Burnley, because it's exactly the same. It's, you know, wooden seats and concrete and poles and restricted views and things. And it's, you know, it is. And I think that is football. It's that belonging. It's that sharing the good and the bad. You know, one of the reasons I'm against VAR is because You know, even though we get shafted every single game against Arsenal, and we will do, no doubt about it, this coming weekend, because it's Arsene Wenger's last home game at the Emirates, that's football, and that is, you know, that is why we love it so much.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, and I think the football is changing so much for me in the sense of where it is, but I still like to see a good piece of skill. I still like the thinking side of it, but I don't know, maybe I'm pining not for the nostalgia of football, but I think I'm pining for the feeling that actually you're all in this together, and you want those moments just to remember why you've become a football fan. I didn't watch Escape to Victory to become an Evertonian. That would be ridiculous. Where I think I'm coming from at is that I just, you know, I think it helps you understand why you love football. And I think sometimes you need to have almost out-of-body experiences to become to understand the football, to understand the love of football. You need to, you know, I love a film called Parenthood, Steve Martin film.
Yeah.
About the roller coaster, and his, you know, his mother-in-law, I think, or his, gives him some really sort of quite trippy advice, and then he just learns to roll with it. And I think that's what football is that you go and you have those sensations of what you have those sensations of just why you want to do it. And, you know, I get the same feeling watching that Escape to Victory penalty as I do when I walk up the steps of the Gladys Street and see the lights and see the grass of Goodison for the first time. And it's very, very hard not to get emotional. And I think, you know, if football can evoke more than one emotion in you, then it's doing the right job. If it can get you to feel as though you're part of such a hive mind, if it can get you to put all of your troubles to one side, then if it can get you to love a group of men or women for 90 minutes and go away with that shared experience, that, you know, sometimes I don't think it gets it too long. Well, I hope we didn't bore you too much. Both of us are speaking to you at the end of a really long day. I think my moment might have rambled a bit, but I do recommend you get onto Smash Pod. We haven't been paid to say this or anything like that, but we really, really do recommend it a lot. So yeah, there we go. Graeme Souness there saying that, you know, playing in managing Blackburn against Burnley was the most intense derby experience, and he did plant a flag in an opponent's centre circle while he was Galatasaray manager, possibly Fenerbahce or Besiktas. We don't do research on this show. And it was interesting to know how that changing of the guard is. And yeah, come on, Ash, come on. Escape to Victory. David Priest loves it, former guest. And we really do, it was good to talk about it. But I think what I'm saying about Goodison, you know, is pretty much how most of you feel about your football club. And that's kind of what it's about. Thank you once again for everybody that supported us. Thank you once again for everyone that's listened or told other people, particularly Hibs fans when we had Pat Nevin on. We've been really, really happy with how this series has gone, but we would be nothing without you. Football memories and moments is nothing without the fans. We aim to be back in the autumn. We are hoping to do a couple of events. We'll see how that goes out. But what we will do is hopefully, we might even do a World Cup special, but, you know, what's this space? But we hope that you have a fantastic summer. Enjoy the World Cup, and see you in the autumn. Bye.